Right, so the discourse that we're looking at, the maimon we're looking at this evening, is based not on a verse in the Torah, but a passage in the Mishnah. So here we're looking at the Mishnah, Rosh Hashanah, chapter 4, and it says like this, Yom Tov Shel Rosh Hashanah, the festival of Rosh Hashanah, Shechal Liyot B'Shabbat, when it comes out on Shabbat, Bamikdash Hayutokin, in the temple they would blow the shofar, Avolov Medina, but not anywhere else. So then it goes on in an interesting way that when the temple was destroyed, they decided they would blow the shofar any place they had a strong bet din. And there's a discussion about that. And it's interesting. I heard the Rebbe discuss this actually about the way they would blow the shofar in places where the bet din. And if I remember rightly, the Rebbe said that in Fez, which was where Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi, Rabbi Isaac from Fez, he lived around the 11th century or early 12th century. And he was a great scholar. And it was said that in his community, they did blow the shofar when Rosh Hashanah was on Shabbat. So even though it was, you didn't do it anywhere else, but there they did. And it was an interesting thing. Now, so that is the key text, as it were, the initial text for the discourse. And the normal reason that's given in the Talmud for this is because a person might have a shofar at home, but he doesn't know how to blow it properly. Or he's got a problem blowing it. He hurt his lip, so now he can't blow it. Across the road outside, there's a man who lives, he knows how to blow the shofar. And this Jew is so concerned, he wants to hear the shofar. He takes his shofar and he runs across the road. Please, can you blow the shofar for me? And he forgets it's Shabbat and you can't carry on Shabbat in the street. And so this is a decree that they made not to blow the shofar on Shabbat in case such a thing would happen. So Hasidic teachings give a different reason, a more profound reason for not blowing the shofar. And that's what we're going to discover in a moment, hopefully. So first of all, we'll have the melody of the maimon. Bum 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 ba. It's a different maimon melody, but it's also a melody of the man. Om bum ba yam. Om bum ba yam bum bo yam bum ba yam bum bo. Oh yam ba. Ya ba ba bum ba ba ya 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 ba ba bum ba bum ba yum ba ba bum ah ya 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 yo ya bum ah yum ba ya yo yum ba ya bo. Right, so we're now going to try and find the maimon. And it's here. Okay. Are we able to see that? Can you see the discourse? Wonderful. Okay. Modern science. Hi, Chesed, lovely scene. Right. I'm not sure if I can make it bigger. Right. Okay. So this was said on the 29th of Elul of 1972, which is the night of the eve of Rosh Hashanah of the Jewish year 5733. And this was actually Muga, this was checked by the Rebbe, and it was published in 1989, also on the eve of Rosh Hashanah. Yom Tov Shel Rosh Hashanah Shel Chol Liyot B'Shabbat. The festival of Rosh Hashanah, which came out on Shabbat, B'Migdash Hayu Tokim. In the temple, they would blow the shofar, Aval Lo B'Medina, but not at the rest, in the rest of the country. U'Mefarish B'Gemara, and it explains in the Talmud, the Rabbanan who the Gazobe, the sages, the rabbis of that period, they made a decree. The Hakol, they made a decree not to blow the shofar on Shabbat. The Hakol chayavim b'tkiyat shofar. Everyone has the duty to hear the shofar. The ein hakol b'kiyim b'tkiyat shofar, but not everyone can do it. It's quite a skill. Sometimes in the synagogue, the person trying to blow the shofar, he's struggling with it. He can't get a sound out of it. Make it more realistic, I'm getting my shofar. Here we are. So here's so the person blowing it, he sometimes can't get a note out of it at all. And it's quite a difficult procedure. So other people, it's very easy for them. So the problem is, since not everyone is an expert at doing it, Gzeira, so this is a decree. Shema yitzlenu biyado, in case a person takes his shofar in his hand, v'yetzel etzel abaki, and he goes across the road or nearby, but outside his own house, into the public thoroughfare, to someone who knows how to blow it, lilmod, in order to learn how to blow it or to get the other person to blow it, v'yavirenu arba amot b'reshut harabim, and then he will be carrying the shofar 4 cubits in the public thoroughfare. One of the rules of Shabbat, one is not supposed to carry outside one's private domain. The private domain, it's one's house, the garden, as long as the garden's got a fence around it. And once we go into the street, or for that matter, into a field, if we're carrying something and we walk 4 cubits, that is a problem. So, V'yadua ha'diyuk b'zeh, and it's known the question about this, which is asked in Hasidic teachings. Ma ra'u chazal, what did the sages see? Lidchot p'mitzvat aseh d'oraita, to push away such an important mitzvah. It's a mitzvah, a command from the Torah. U'befrat mitzvat shofar, especially the command of shofar, Shehi mitzvah ramah v'nis'ah me'od, it's a very exalted mitzvah. Mushum gzeira ba'alma, because of an ordinary kind of concern. U'befrad achshav. Okay, we'll miss out that. So we're going to line 12. V'gam hareach ashash uled yotim b'kali adah. This anxiety is about someone who forgets that it's Shabbat. Like, who would forget that it's Shabbat? But how could ve'eich manu b'shvil zeh? Why is it that they prevented very spiritual people from having this mitzvah? That now they can't blow the shofar on Shabbat, and they're mikamad tzadikim gedolim v'tovim, great righteous people who would have loved to hear the shofar, and unfortunately, according to this, they can't hear the shofar simply because of this rabbinic decree. V'yadua haber b'zen, it's known, the basic explanation of this in Hasidic teachings, right? This is note eight. It refers to several different teachings by Rabbi Shneur Zalman and later Hasidic teachers. The zeh sheberosh hashanah tzarich litkor b'shofar. The reason why on Rosh Hashanah we have to blow the shofar, who bichdei is in order. Now, there are a whole lot of different reasons given among the sages why we blow the shofar. For example, the Rambam writes, the shofar is like a wake-up call. Wake up, sleepers, from your slumber. That's what Maimonides, the Rambam writes. That's what the shofar is coming to say. Wake up. Think about how you're living. Are you doing the right things? Are you serving God in the proper way? Are you keeping the mitzvah in the proper way? Think about what you're doing. Wake up. Improve yourself. That's one way of thinking about it. Another way of thinking about it is it's an expression of sounding the shofar to express the kingship of God. It's a triumphant call. And like the trumpets that are sounded when at a coronation, so on Rosh Hashanah, it is a kind of new revelation of our relationship with God in a tremendous way. And we recognize God and we blow the shofar in that recognition. It's another aspect. Rabbi Saadia Gaon, I think it was, he listed 10 different reasons for the blowing of the shofar. And among all these, I think he didn't include this one, which is a Hasidic reason, one of the several Hasidic reasons. So what it says here in Rabbi Shneur Zalman, the first Chabad Rebbe's writings, the fact that we on Rosh Hashanah have to blow the shofar, who bichdei lo'orer al yedei zeh, is in order to arouse through this lamaila above hata'anug bebriyat olamo, the delight in the creation of the worlds. Now this is a fascinating concept. And I think in order for us to try to understand this concept, let's have a look at the Sfirot, the divine emanations. So here we have, now wait a second, it would be nice if we could make this a bit smaller, right here, so we're making it smaller maybe. Right. Okay, I'm hoping people can see this. Now, this is the flow of Sfirot from the infinite, from Ein Sof above. And the first level that these Sfirot are described over here is the divine will crown. And that has the Hebrew word ratzon. Now, will is something that you can reveal to another person. A person could say, I want to go to Jerusalem. Person wants to go to Jerusalem, all right? He can tell you, I want to go to Jerusalem. That's his will. Now, presumably, when he gets to Jerusalem, there's going to be some kind of pleasure or delight at the fact that he got there. That delight is very difficult to communicate. You can tell a person what you want to do, but you cannot tell them how much you enjoy doing it. You might try, a person might write a poem or paint a picture or something, or sing a song. But the level of delight is higher than the level of will. Now, in this diagram, it's lacking the level of delight, because this crown, this is like Keter, crown, and the inward aspect of Keter is called Atik, Atik Yomin, the Ancient of Days, and Atik is seen as the source of delight. So at the very, in the Jewish spiritual cosmology, the Kabbalistic cosmology, so to speak, the highest level is the light. So I'm sorry it's not here in the diagram. I was in a rush, and this is a diagram I've got handy. But for this discourse, it really needs this extra point right at the top. It would be right at the top. It would be just under the infinite. Here would be this level of the light. And what's happening is this, the light is being drawn down through all these different dimensions into Malchut, which kingship, which means really into the world. And by us blowing the shofar, we are drawing down this divine delight. So that is a Hasidic Kabbalistic explanation of what the shofar is doing. It's very meaningful, I believe. It is a way of hearing the shofar when we do hear the shofar. Next Shabbat is Rosh Hashanah, but because it's Shabbat, we won't be hearing the shofar. But on Sunday, we will. And it's a very special mitzvah to try to get to hear the shofar by going to a synagogue. Sometimes you can get a person to come round to you and blow the shofar if you can't get to a synagogue, things like that. But one way of hearing the shofar is in terms of the light. And that's what this discourse is focusing on. So at this point, I'm going to pause and just ask whether everyone is keeping up with this and whether there's any comment anyone would like to say. Yes, Deborah.
Is the delight from the infinite?
Yes. It's delight from God, from the infinite, and it sort of comes through into us as well. And it's our, and it sort of it gets revealed within us. And as the discourse is going to go on to say, when we say the prayers, now this is particularly about the Musaf prayer, the additional prayer, which is said on Rosh Hashanah, which is very long. And it's got three, it's very long, particularly because it's got three sections, each of which has got 10 verses. One set of 10 verses talks about God's kingship. The next set talks about God remembering us. And the third set of 10 verses talks about the shofar. And by reading these verses, each person is supposed to be reading these verses in the Musaf, in the additional service of Rosh Hashanah, which is very long. It's sort of midday or after midday in most synagogues. That is a kind of revelation of that delight. And so therefore, a way of understanding this discourse is that on Rosh Hashanah, hi Eleanor, good to see you, that on Rosh Hashanah, we are drawing down this ethereal, transcendent delight into the world, step by step through the Sfirot, till it comes to us. And we are then saying the verses about the kingship, the remembering, and the shofar. And that sort of reveals the delight into the world. And that's, you know, that's a way of understanding what is happening on Rosh Hashanah. It's a new beginning for the world. As it explains in Tanya, there's a new flow of life force taking place on Rosh Hashanah. And that new flow of life force is with a tremendous manifestation of the light. So we're involved in a very profound cosmic, spiritual cosmic process. And we have a role in that process. What the discourse is going to say is the reason we have a role, part of the reason, is because each one of us is like a spark of the soul of Adam and Eve. And when Adam and Eve were created, they were originally one being, and then God divided them in two. When Adam and Eve were created, they called on existence to recognize God. And we are partaking of that as well. So it's a tremendously joyful, powerful, joyful time. Now, it's true that at the same time, God is judging the world. I mean, that's really why God is judging the world. Is the world fitting? Is the project of the world fitting to continue? And it is our devotion to God and our feeling, this delight, this special quality flowing from God, that's what makes and revealing it in our prayers, experiencing it in some sense in our heart, and expressing it in the prayer to the best of our ability, which makes the whole project universe worth continuing as far as God is concerned. That's the theory. There are other discourses. Just before, by divine providence, a friend of mine phoned me up discussing exactly this topic, but he was reading a different talk by the Rebbe, where the emphasis is not on delight, but on the abnegation of the person to God. That's another thing. The shofar brings a sense of total abnegation to God, and deeper and deeper. So all these different dimensions of bonding to God, whether it's abnegation to God, whether it's delight, absorbing, experiencing in some sense this infinite delight from the divine and expressing it in some way, and especially through those verses which are there in the Musaf, the additional prayer. This is something very, very powerful. Yes. Okay, so let's go back to the discourse. Hi, Jeffrey.
Now, good evening, Rabbi.
Right, okay. I don't know. Right, now.
Apologies for my lateness.
Okay.
Can I just ask something?
Yes,
I'm sorry, I mean, I think I get what you're saying, but it sort of pretends like the evil isn't there.
Sorry?
Doesn't it? I mean, what am I supposed to do with the evil in the world? I mean, I know that my evil I'm supposed to do tshuva with, but I mean, am I supposed to pretend it's not there when I'm doing all this?
That's actually, you know, that's an extremely good point. I'm going to stop sharing, Kristen. That's an extremely good point. You see, on the one hand, we can see Rosh Hashanah. You know, there are texts about it in the Talmud and elsewhere. You know, Rosh Hashanah is a day of judgment. God is judging the world. The Talmud says this in Tractate Rosh Hashanah, page 16. So what is it there? God is judging the world. The people who are meritorious are immediately written down in the Book of Life. The people who are judged as wicked are written down in the opposite book. Then there are the people in the middle. And the process of prayer on Rosh Hashanah and repentance during the 10 days of penitence, and finally Yom Kippur, hopefully will tip the scale so that those uncertain people get moved into the Book of Life. And so it's all a very strict business. And it sounds as if you're referring to that kind of thing, Eve. Whereas while this is there in Hasidic teachings in various ways, has a completely different dimension as well. There is a joyful dimension of recognizing God as king. God needs to have a people in order to rule over the world. And like a close people, you know, the there's a king in a palace, and the palace is in the capital city. And in the capital city, there's the nobility and the various people who come to the king's court. You know, and when the king holds court, there's all the, very notable figures. And through them, the decrees go through the whole of society, the whole country. And in that way, there's the peace of the kingdom, Pax Britannica, as they used to say. I don't know whether there was a Pax Americana, but something like that. So it is the idea that the Jewish people have this special role. And what we have to do on Rosh Hashanah, it's not so much a matter of, I mean, certainly we have to smarten ourselves up, repent if anything that we can see that we're doing, which is the wrong thing, well, let's stop doing it. And if there's a right thing which we haven't begun doing, well, let's begin doing that. Or we don't do it enough, so we'll do it more. So, but that's all a part. And you see, the question of whether being written down in the book of life or the opposite, you know, it's sort of incidental to the real goal, which is to dedicate oneself to God in such an intense way that God's kingship over the world is truly established. And if God's kingship over the world is really fully established, everyone in the world will serve God in a beautiful way. That's actually what Rosh Hashanah is really about. I'm just looking around. I've got here a Machsa Rosh Hashanah. Let me just find it. I'd like to read a few words from it. Here we have the Machsa of Rosh Hashanah. So therefore, here we have, this is the third blessing of the morning service. And this section I'm reading now is in each one of the Amida prayers on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. It's not there in any other prayers during the year. It's on these days of awe, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So we say, you are holy, your name is holy, holy ones every day praise you. That's in every Amidah that we say. It's the beginning of the third blessing. And then it goes on to say, therefore, bestow your awe, Lord our God, on all your creatures.
Yeah.
Put your awe on everything you've created. May all your works be in awe of you, and may all creatures bow down before you.
Yeah.
And let them all become one unit together to carry out your will with a full heart. Because we know, Lord our God, that you have the power. There's strength in your right hand and your left hand. Your name is revered over all that you've created. So that's really the theme. We are praying that God should be recognized throughout existence. Now, of course, that does exactly what you're saying. It gets rid of the bad. If someone is doing bad, they're going to stop doing bad. If they have a little bit of awe of God, he's going to stop doing this and he's going to stop doing that and he's going to start doing a certain positive things. So I would see that as the way it all links together.
You know, that's beautiful. That's like the second paragraph of after Aleinu. Can't remember how it begins.
You're right. I mean, it's got the same theme of the whole world.
The same theme. So that really fixes the evil in the world and is more important than your mingy little sins. I mean, assuming you're not, you know, blowing people up and killing them wholesale, because what you're praying for is the peace and happiness and godliness of the world.
Yes, for everyone. But it goes through the Jewish people, through the land of Israel, and into the world. But it's a global, you know, the prayer starts off with a global perspective.
That's a completely different Rosh Hashanah, and it's a much more, yeah, it's better. Thank you. Much better.
Although much that better. Is the text, that's the text of the prayer that everyone says. But it's
nobody does anything with it until you started talking.
Yeah. So Hasidic teachings highlight this positive. Yeah. Action, you could say.
Yeah. That's wonderful. That's just wonderful. Okay. Thank you.
Lovely. Right. So we had this thing on the first page, line 15, that the fact on Rosh Hashanah we blow the shofar is in order to arouse this delight, this supernal delight in the creation of the worlds, like it's a divine delight. And that divine delight, we arouse that and evoke it, and it flows down into us and emanates from us. And since on Shabbat, v'cheven shebashabbat, mitzad atzmo, on Shabbat in itself, yeshno atanu, there's delight. Shabbat is a day of delight. Lachain, therefore, Rosh Hashanah shechol yot b'Shabbat, when Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbat, like this year, ha-mitzvah detkiyat shofar, the mitzvah of blowing the shofar, eina b'tokef kol kach. It doesn't have such a great force compared with when Rosh Hashanah is in the weekdays. It's less necessary because there is the Shabbat dimension. And here the Rebbe is putting together the Hasidic explanation and the Talmudic explanation. And therefore, since it's not needed so much, because Shabbat itself has the power of delight, Shabbat radiates delight. When it comes to Shabbat, a person hopefully feels, a sense of delight. The whole idea of not working on Shabbat, all of that, creates an environment where there's this special Shabbat peace, like we say, Shabbat Shalom, Sabbath of peace. So that atmosphere. So since Shabbat has this quality of peace and delight, the idea of blowing the shofar, he nidchet mipnei achshash, is once we have the anxiety, shema yaverena abba amap yirishut harabim, that someone's going to carry the shofar in the street. So therefore we hold back and we say, you know what, you don't have to blow the shofar. Don't blow the shofar. And the fact that in the temple they would still blow, even in when Rosh Hashanah fell on Shabbat, is because in delight, there are many levels. The level of delight, when you were standing in the temple and you heard the shofar being blown, that delight was incredible. He now let your term midagat hatanug de Shabbat. That delight was even higher than the delight of Shabbat. And so therefore, since you're coming to the temple and there, when they blow the shofar, it's something inexpressible. It's just an immense, immense surge of divine delight that you experience. Shabbat does not push that away. Now, the Rebbe doesn't address the fact that the Mishnah goes on to say, he doesn't address here, the fact that the Mishnah goes on to say that in a place where there's a Beit Din, they also would blow the shofar on Shabbat. And I think the reason for that is not because there's such a great delight when there's a Bet Din, but compared with the temple, because the temple is much higher than the Bet Din. But in the place where there's a Bet Din, they're able to make sure that no one will carry on Shabbat. In Fez, the city of Fez in Morocco, where Rabbi Isaac, Rabbi Yitzhak Alfasi, Rabbi Yitzhak, the Fez figure, lived, he was such an authority in the city, no one would dream of carrying on Shabbat. It just wasn't a possibility. In that environment, you kept Shabbat. You have this great rabbi there, and you know, when it was Shabbat, everyone felt it. That's how I understand it. Now we come to a further level of discussion. I mean, this itself that we've just learned. Hello, Rivka. I didn't manage to say hello to you before. This level of appreciating and understanding the whole idea of blowing or not blowing the shofar, not blowing the shofar when it's Shabbat. This is like a teaching in itself, and it's a very powerful teaching, I believe, very meaningful. But then we have another dimension that we're going to understand. And this is focusing on the question, what's in the limelight? Is it what God does, or what God empowers man and woman to do here in this world? Is the focus something which is unfurling from the divine? Or is the focus on the human being, the little human being of flesh and blood with all kinds of problems, that needs to eat and it has medical problems, God forbid, and has passions which are inappropriate sometimes. That little human being is empowered by God to play a very important role in the universe, as we saw just now with the blowing of the shofar. So now we're going to the whole idea that we human beings, the Jewish people, blow the shofar, listen to the shofar. So now we're going to explore this dimension further. But Salih Lavin, now we have to understand. Harein Yadur, now it's known. The Zepar Shabosh Hashanah Tzarich Lo'orei HaTa'anut, the fact that in Rosh Hashanah we have to arouse this quality of delight, Al Yedei Avodat HaAdam, through the service of man, by the blowing of the shofar. Even though, Shebetchilat HaBriyah, the beginning of creation, Haita HaAmshacha Me'atzma, at the beginning of creation, the flow from God came by itself. There wasn't any person to draw that flow down. So how is it we have this distinction? The beginning of creation was God acting by himself, so to speak, and now he's in some kind of partnership with man. The difference is who ki al yedei it oravuta tanug delamayla aksho. The fact that the arousal of delight above now, he alidea with Hatam Shal Yisrael, coming about through our service, Shahashoresh the Yisrael Uba'atzmut, because the root of the Jewish people is in the essence of the divine, Hata'anug Shanim Shavachshav, the delight, the divine delight that is drawn down now, who na'ale yoter, is much higher me'atanuk shenimshach mitzad atzmo than that which emerged by itself b'tchilat ha'priya, the beginning of creation. That's an absolutely striking statement. It's saying that at the beginning of creation there was a certain divine process which led to the creation of the world, and what we are doing now by the Jewish reckoning, thousands of years later, right? It's a long time after by our reckoning, The world thinks that, you know, children are taught in school that the world is billions and billions of years old. But when we count the creation Anno Mundi, we're now approaching 5,784. So it's a very young world, but nonetheless, in terms of human consciousness, 5,000 years is a long time. And here, thousands of years after creation, what we are achieving by blowing the shofar or through the combination of Shabbat and not blowing the shofar, we are eliciting a divine delight greater than the divine delight at the beginning of existence. And according to this, Rosh Hashanah shechol yot b'Shabbat, when Rosh Hashanah is on Shabbat, Shahatanug, now here comes a very subtle question. When the delight, whom it's as mam de Shabbat, we're saying that on Shabbat there's delight because of the Shabbat. Now, who made Shabbat? Did we make Shabbat? Shabbat mikadsha v'kaima. Shabbat happens all by itself. Every seventh day is Shabbat. Chaser l'cha'ola, it seems to lack ma'alat hata'anug, the exalted quality of delight, shemit orer, which is aroused specifically al yedei avodat ha'adam, through the power of man. It's a very interesting question. The focus in Chabad thought is on the power of the individual man and woman, that we are keeping the mitzvah of the Torah, and God empowers us to do things which are have incredibly far-reaching consequences, even though we, as simple human beings, we don't realize that. It's a mitzvah. Oh, come to shul, hear the shofar. Did you get there in time for the shofar? Oh, I overslept. I missed it. You know, we look at things in our human way. But from the Hasidic point of view, we're in the middle of this tremendously significant process. And here we have a profound question. If we're saying that this year, when Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbat, the fact that it's Shabbat contributes to this delight in such an intense way that we don't have to blow the shofar, where is our human element? Where are we in the story? Okay, now let's just take it a bit further. Now, even though also, Rosh Hashanah shechol yot b'Shabbat, when Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbat, there is the service of saying the verses of Shofarot, right? In the Musaf, in the additional service, there are these three sets of verses, the third of which are 10 verses all about the Shofar.
Can you, Rabbi Tali?
Yes.
Sorry to interrupt. Increase the size of the lettering, please, a little bit. I'm finding it. I like to follow. And
yeah, I'm sorry. It's the maximum I can do. It. Sorry, I can't do it.
Okay, thank you. Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
Now, even though on Shabbat, when we don't blow the shofar, we still have the saying of these 10 verses about the shofar. Hare amirat ha-psukim, the saying of those verses, hi b'chdei sham shachat yeh b'gilui, it's so that the flow that is caused by the blowing of the shofar on the one hand, or Shabbat itself on the other hand, you know, the flow of delight, there's a flow of delight on Shabbat, there's a flow of delight through blowing the shofar, and when we say these verses, it takes this flow and it makes it revealed. It's as if some vitamin is flowing into our body, and then through saying the verses, the body is redolent with good health because of that vitamin. Yeah, rather simplistic image, but the difference between imbibing something and that should be revealed. As it says this in Hasidic teachings, the flow that comes about because of the commandments is not revealed so much. And the revelation is through the Torah. Torah Or, as Torah is called, the Torah of Light. So by saying verses which are from the Torah about the blowing of the shofar, that reveals the effect of the Torah, of the shofar. So therefore, in order that the flow of the light which comes about through blowing the shofar should be revealed, it's who's saying the verses of those 10 verses about the shofar. Now that's the reason also why when Rosh Hashanah is on Shabbat, we say these 10 verses, even though the flow of the light is in a sense coming by itself because of the Shabbat, because the flow which comes about because it's Shabbat is itself supernal. In order to draw that revelation down below, that is through saying those 10 verses. So this is something that applies this year as well. The Shabbat is something which expresses a beautiful sense of delight, but that the delight of Shabbat in itself is supernal, it's in higher realms. And in order to draw it down into the atmosphere of this world, we have to have the saying of the verses about the shofar. V'chevan shadidei amirat ha'psukim v'rak gilui ha'mshofar. Since the saying of the verses is only revealing the flow, v'mshofar atzma, and the flow itself, hi mitzad ha'shabbat atzmo, and the flow itself is because of Shabbat, so then, harei v'rosh ha'shanah shechol liyot v'shabbat. Now we come back to that important question. On Rosh Hashanah, which falls on Shabbat, chaser lechora, there seems to be lacking ha'ilui shenaaseh al yedei ha'avodah, the special effect of our human involvement, that we human beings do something. Now, I want to...
Sorry, may I ask a question, please? What are the psukim? An example? Can you give an example? And which means that every year we don't say it unless it's a Shabbat? Only on Shabbat, on Rosh Hashanah Shabbat, you say this psukim?
No. We say it every single year. Let me just find the Mishnah. Oh, 1 second. I'm just... We go back to this text. Here, Rivka, this is what we read at the very beginning about the festival of Rosh Hashanah that occurs on the temple. On Shabbat in the temple, they would sound the shofar, but not elsewhere. Now then, it goes on in the Mishnah about, this is towards the, what happens in the Mishnah. Ela, now the Mishnah is telling us the order of Musaf. Omer Avot, we say about the patriarchs in the first blessing of the Amidah. Uvurot, and the second Atagibor, the second blessing of the Amidah. Ukdushat Hashem, the holiness of God, that's Atakadosh, you are holy. Bocholel Malchiot in Kedushat Hayom. And then when we, in the next blessing, which talks about the holiness of the day, we include 10 verses, which are the verses of kingship. And then we blow the shofar. Zichronot, then we say 10 verses expressing God remembering us. And then we blow the shofar. And shofarot, and then we say 10 blessings about the shofar. 10 verses about the shofar, v'tokea, and then we blow the shofar again. Then we say modim, avodah, nitzritzei, hoda'ah is modim, birchat kohanim, and then sim shalom, and that's the end of the Amidah. So these verses are there every Rosh Hashanah, and it's in the Musaf. And if you look in the Machzor for Musaf, you will see that's what makes the Rosh Hashanah Musaf such a long prayer. It's the longest a need of prayer. Even Yom Kippur has the vidui at the end of the Amidah, but Rosh Hashanah, the actual text of the prayer, is very long because of these 30 extra verses, and each set of 10 verses has an introduction and a conclusion. It's well worth, incidentally, it's well worth, before Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, looking a little bit at the texts of the prayers to try to get some idea of what is going on in the prayer service.
Thank you.
So, but now let's go back to this focus. The idea that the person has to do something. Now, I see this as a tremendously significant aspect, which some people say is characteristic of the entire mystical tradition, the Jewish mystical tradition, the Kabbalah and Hasidism, that there is something the person does which has an effect on the divine and on the cosmos that the divine is creating. And that quality that the individual has, that power, that empowerment that the individual has. Now, as far as I understand, I might be wrong, but as far as I understand, for the Kabbalists, it was the Kabbalists who had that power. Because they knew the deep secrets of Torah, when they prayed or did anything, they had a kavanah. They were able to focus on what that thing is really about. And therefore, they were able to make some kind of divine process take place. Other people weren't party to that information. But when the Hasidic movement began, the teachings of Hasidism are addressed to every individual. So every person, whoever it is, and whatever their other aspects of their situation, we all have a spiritual power in relation to our role in between God and the cosmos, drawing godliness into the cosmos, revealing godliness, revealing the divine delight. We all have a role. A child, a teenager, a person who goes to shul once a year, if that. Everyone has a special power. And so what the Rebbe is asking, hold on one second. So what the Rebbe is asking is, if Rosh Hashanah is on Shabbat, where do we see our special contribution, right? Where do we see that? Because we're not actually blowing the shofar. Eve, did you want to say something?
No.
You didn't want. Okay, let's go back to the discourse. Right. Now we come to a fascinating teaching, which is all about the birth of a human being. It's actually something which is written about at the beginning of Tanya.
Sorry, I was trying to get myself unmuted. I was thinking maybe it was something to do with what we're doing when we're praying.
Go on.
Well, I mean, the shofar, in a way, is a voice. And we may not be able to use that voice, but we have our voices and our inner voices. So perhaps, you know, in a way, it's a good thing that we don't have a shofar that day, if it forces us to use our own inner force or voice or something.
Absolutely. That's exactly what the discourse ends up on saying.
Our
putting ourselves into those verses in the additional service, in the Musaf, that's what we have to do on this day of Rosh Hashanah that falls on Shabbat. And that is the thing which has this climactic positive effect, drawing the divine delight into the world and revealing. Yeah, it's exactly that. Very nice. Wow. Thanks.
There's a blessing I'm supposed to say at this point.
There is a phrase, actually, Baruch Shekivanti. Blessed be one who made me have the right the right perspective, the right kavanah. Yeah, that's very good. But the way in which the Rebbe gets to that, and that's what it says in the last page of the discourse. But in order to get to that, he presents an extremely interesting structure over something that it says at the beginning of Tanya, which he links to Rosh Hashanah. So let's see if we can do a little bit of this. So this will be understood by what the sages said. When a baby is born, any Jewish child is born, mashvi'in oto, he is made to take an oath, tehi tzadik, be righteous. Now, the previous Rebbe said that on the first Rosh Hashanah of the life of on the first Rosh Hashanah of the life of the Tzemach Tzedek, right? So the Tzemach Tzedek said that when he was coming up to 1 year old, in the first Rosh Hashanah of his life, Rabbi Shneur Zalman, who is his grandfather, said a discourse beginning with this idea of when the soul is born, it's made to take an oath, be a tzaddik. And those are the first three chapters of the book Tanya. Now, this links with the whole idea of Rosh Hashanah, because the souls of the entire Jewish people were part of the soul of Adam. So Rosh Hashanah, which is the day when Adam was created, you see, Rosh Hashanah is not the day when the 6 days of creation begin. The 6 days of creation began yesterday, the 25th of Elul. Today is like the second day of creation. But on the sixth day of creation, then, yesterday was the 25th. So the sixth day of creation will be Shabbat, this coming Shabbat. And that is the day when Adam is created. And then there is a renewal of the whole idea of the drawing down of the soul of Adam into his body and the creation of Adam. So since we all partake of that soul of Adam, so it's also the birthday of every individual Jew. You could say, I mean, every human being is descended from Adam. So in a sense, it's the birthday of everyone. And one can say that this is how this idea of the baby being made to take an oath, be a righteous person, links to Rosh Hashanah. So birth and the whole spiritual nature of birth links in to Rosh Hashanah. And this idea of making an oath, mashbiyin, that relates to the seventh month. So you see, there's the seventh month, which is Tishrei, and the Rosh Hashanah is on the first of Tishrei. But the word seven relates to the word oath. And so, and then there's another word, which also relates to this, is the word sova, satisfaction. So the idea that God pours satisfaction into the soul and makes the soul take an oath, all in the atmosphere of the, which is renewed particularly on this first day of the seventh month, which is Rosh Hashanah, all that strengthens the bond of the soul and the power of the soul. And what the soul has to achieve is that it has to struggle with the animal soul, because we've been talking about the divine soul. It's got to struggle with the animal soul and with the body and with the different situations that it finds itself in the world. And what is happening through this process of making the divine soul taking an oath and giving it this sense of satisfaction and this sense of rejuvenation in the seventh month on Rosh Hashanah is all to give the divine soul the power to deal with the animal soul. Well, let's just look at this. Al yidei zeh, through this, tuchal lehitgaber al nefesh ha-bahamit, the divine soul will be able to conquer the animal soul. And that's why the oath and the word satisfaction, because satisfaction means it's empowered. And through the oath, now how does the oath work? So it's not an ordinary oath. This oath is a connection of the soul to its root. And the root of the soul is in the essence of the divine. And when you come to the level of the essence of the divine, everything is good. From that point of view, everything has a good potential which can be revealed. And so therefore, this transforms the animal soul of the person, their carnal appetites, it's all transformed into something positive there on Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah can be, and Yom Kippur, can be an extremely spiritual experience in which we become, let's say, very temporarily, but at that temporary point, we become a little bit transformed into a higher kind of person. And so that's what happens through that, through this process of Rosh Hashanah. And there's a whole discussion of these different levels of the oath and the seventh and the satisfaction. And then a kind of a Kabbalistic interjection by the Tzemach Tzedek. And this is why Rosh Hashanah is really the beginning of everything, even though it's not actually the beginning of creation. But we say in the Machzor, Zeh Hayom Tchilat Ma'asecha, this day is the beginning of your works. Now, in what sense is that? Because the real work is that we have the empowerment and the task to make this world into a dwelling for the divine. And that's actually, now there's a very important statement in the Zohar. When Adam and Eve were created, they said, they were like one person. Adam, hichriz l'chol abruim, he announced to all created things, all the creatures of the world, bo nishtachve v'nichra, come, let us bow down, let us bow, nivracha, let us kneel, lifnei Hashem osenu, before Hashem, our God. And the whole of existence responded and said, Hashem malach geut lavesh, God rules, he is clothed in glory. So that is our role. We are supposed to set off existence. We are supposed to trigger existence. That existence as a whole, whether it's the human beings, the animals, the fish, the birds, the stones, the trees, the blades of grass, everything should be, the stars and the planets, everything should recognize the oneness of God and God the Creator. And that power that we have comes from God. And so it is. So it is Rosh Hashanah, Shebechol Shana V'Shana. At the beginning of every year on the Rosh Hashanah, that the Jewish people crown God. You see, they crown God to be king over them. And as a result of that, he's king over the whole world. And through this, they make the world into a dwelling for the divine. And every year, this crowning, this coronation, this making of this dwelling is on a higher level. Because the power in every individual man and woman to do this is such that on each Rosh Hashanah, the beginning of the seventh month, there comes anew the power of this oath. The oath connects our soul to its essence. And so we get a fresh flow from that essence. And through the fact that Rav Ishmael Zalman said this teaching on the Rosh Hashanah, and so he said that teaching itself is revealing that idea even more. So now we're moving to the last section. So our Pisa, now according to this, we can explain further that even on the Rosh Hashanah, which falls on Shabbat, there is the special power of the individual service of the divine. Because the intention in drawing down this delight and the meaning of the delight itself is really for what the person does. That through this delight, the person will be empowered to make the whole world a dwelling for God. And the empowerment to the person is dafka. When that delight is revealed, the delight has to be revealed. Now, since even on Rosh Hashanah, which falls on Shabbat, the revelation of the delight is through the saying of the verses about the shofar, as we said earlier on, that means that the service of saying those verses about the shofar is absolutely essential. That is an essential thing when it comes to a Rosh Hashanah that falls on Shabbat like ours, saying of those verses. And we can add that since, and now this is as Eve said, right? That the idea of saying those verses is highlighted on this Shabbat, on this coming Rosh Hashanah, on Shabbat, and that has the full force of this Kabbalistic Hasidic dimension of drawing this divine delight into the world. And one can add that the fact through the mitzvah of the blowing of the shofar, there is only a drawing out, a drawing down of the delight. The revelation is through the saying of the verses, which is the Torah. Now that's because the root of the Torah is higher than the root of the mitzvah. Blowing the shofar is a mitzvah, and the root of the Torah is even higher. And this connects also with the idea that there's something very special, extra, about the saying of these verses, because the flow through the blowing of the shofar is only the revelation that comes from the essence, but through saying the verses, we draw down the concealment of the essence itself. Now, that's a very interesting idea, that the verses reach even higher than this blowing of the shofar. And this is like the spiritual ascent that will be in the future with the coming of Mashiach. So therefore, there's an incredible moment. This coming Rosh Hashanah, the first day of Rosh Hashanah on Shabbat, that the saying of those verses is itself something tremendous with a tremendous power. And so now we can understand even more that when even when Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbat, there is a focus on the individual and his or her service of God. Because through the saying of those verses, the flow which comes into the world is much higher. And since Shabbat is the idea of rest and delight, in very simple terms as well, so the service on Rosh Hashanah, when it's Shabbat, and there is something which is with an atmosphere of rest and delight, and that has an effect on the whole year. That the entire year should be a year of rest and delight until we have the ultimate rest, the day which is completely Shabbat and is rest forever, very quickly in our time, with the coming of Mashiach and the rebuilding of the temple.
Amen.
Amen.
The Koyach Rebbe.
Okay, I wish everyone a very happy new year. Ktiva, ktiva, b'chatzima tova, l'shana tova.
Ktiva tova, Charlie.
Thank you. Everything good to each of you in every way.
Same to you, of course.
Thank you, Rabbi.
We'll be thinking of you, Charlie. We'll be thinking of you.
Thank you. L'shana tova, to one and all.
Thank you.
Ktiva, b'chatzima tova. Thank you, Rabbi. And also, just to let the person know who wanted to see a bigger, it was emailed to us, and also if you're on a phone, you can open the screen by putting two fingers on and spreading the fingers to the sides of the thing, and then you can make it bigger.
So how do I do that? I'll go into my email.
Are you on
email.
A computer or on a phone? So
I'm
just
on
click
the,
on your
on the...
email. So what you can do is, if you see the email, it's an attachment, so you can open the attachment in the email. And you don't even have to download it. You just open on your computer. And then you can have that window half open. And then the window in the Zoom, if you want to see the rabbi and everything, half open, or just listen. And then you can actually increase the size on your computer to like 200% or 150%. And that'll make it bigger. So you'll see less of the whole page, but all the letters will be bigger. Does that make sense?
Thank you.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Thanks very much, Israel.
Thanks for your
sure.
Okay, all the very best and a very happy new year to
you. You too. Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.